Yeah.
Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
It's all over.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. A big week as we walk up to UFC 203. You would think the heavyweight title is the big thing that we should be talking about, but clearly, all anyone wants to talk about is one of two things, either the cult of personality himself, CM Punk, and or the Athletic Commission in Ohio and their ridiculous way by which they just go, he's like Brock Lesnar, but tinier.
Okay.
He's like Brock Lesnar, but tinier. That's why, I mean.
Are you one of those people that
he's like Brock Lesnar, but tinier.
Okay, I guess I have to. Now, see, I wanted to start with the heavyweight championship of the world. I was trying to start there, so the super MMA dorks that really get mad about CM Punk being on this card don't get too pissed at us. By the way, CM Punk made a great point this past week. If you didn't follow the media conference call that was going on earlier this week,
which was awesome, by the way,
it was pretty good. He said on there, hey, this is the UFC. I'm not taking a slot from another fighter. They can have as many fighters as they want on the roster, which is true. This isn't an NFL team. This isn't a baseball team. This isn't an NBA team. This is the UFC. If they want him to fight, he can fight, and he's going to put a lot more eyeballs on the first title defense for Stipe Miocic than anything else would have put eyeballs on it, other than taking another champ or throwing in a marquee fighter like Conor McGregor would have put on the fight. So if you want people to see this heavyweight championship, you should be really happy that CM Punk is on this card, because a lot of people are talking about him. And yes, maybe it's overshadowing a bit, but it's interesting when you've got a guy who's basically in his first title defense, this many people talking about his pay-per-view, because I think we've got a really interesting fight at the top of that card.
You've got a really interesting fight, and if you have not watched the Robin Black breakdown of this weekend, it is a fabulous way to describe what this fight could be. Now, you've got, I don't necessarily know that Overeem has the skills to beat Stipe. But
you don't think so?
But he has...
Which Overeem? It's time to play Overeem.
Well, we could play that game. But the thing with Overeem that has always been his kryptonite is wrestling, and Stipe's ability to get it to the mat.
Are you calling a CM Punk run it? Never mind.
No, I'm not calling. You are going to ruin the whole show, I'm sure. No, I'm just saying, like, if Stipe, whose striking I think is fantastic, if he gets in trouble because Overeem's striking should be markedly better, he can always take it to the ground and likely at will against Alistair Overeem. And if Reem gets taken down, and you know this better than anybody, if Reem gets taken down for three straight rounds, rounds four and five, if Stipe still got gas, he's going to be able to pick Overeem apart.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this fight, like you said, is so interesting.
Because, well, I mean, Stipe's been in a couple five-rounders, too. Don't forget. I mean, because he's been in some of those five-round main events. He's been, obviously, up against Junior Dos Santos. That was a loss, but, I mean, he went through five rounds, so he's a guy who's done it before. I don't know if Alistair has ever gone five rounds. I mean, he had some of those pride fights in the old days where those would be long fights, but he's never gone five rounds. He's never fought past three in a fight. So this is going to be really interesting to kind of see. Deep waters is what we always say in these type of fights.
we do. And like I said, if Reem can keep himself off of the mat and keep his striking, his ability to, and this is what Robin Black talks a little bit about in his breakdown, his ability to switch stances and kind of lull you to sleep by switching his stances so you don't actually know where the strikes are coming from is something that takes a little bit getting used to and is not something that Stipe has faced in any of the other guys that he's fought.
Well, I don't want to misspeak here, and I'm not taking anything away from Alistair Overeem the way I'm going to say this, but he's got one of the most casual styles you'll see, especially at that division. And the reason it's casual is because he's comfortable and he's been striking so long and he's done K1 for so long, and he's just, I mean, the guy's been fighting for a long, long time. So when you look at a guy like Alistair Overeem, it's not that he's lazy in the cage. He's just very comfortable striking, and he feels like he can get away with some things, and quite frankly does get away with a lot of things that other fighters couldn't necessarily get away with, because because basically he's been in a cage or in a ring for the past 15 years doing this, and he's been really, really effective in most instances. So when you talk about those changing angles and those differing styles, I think part of that happens to be it's very you're not going to see anything herky-jerky from Alistair Overeem.
No, it's going to be smooth.
Those are your tells. When you're fighting a guy and your coach is, hey, watch for this drop, watch for this, watch for this other thing, Alistair has been a guy traditionally that doesn't have a whole lot of those things when he's got gas. If he starts gassing, he starts throwing some of the haymakers, starts throwing those bigger kicks that are a lot slower. They're lumbering, and they're not quite as effective as like early round Alistair Overeem would traditionally be. And again, which Alistair shows up? Which one do we see? Do we see the Junior Dos Santos Alistair, the big win Alistair, or do we see the Ben Rothwell loss Alistair?
Right.
Which one do we get? Because depending on which one we get, I mean, this could be an easy night or a terrible night for Stipe Miocic. Could be one of the two.
And if you look at 2016, Stipe has fought for 3 minutes and 30 seconds in totality, because since going 2 5-rounders in a row in 14 and 15, he beat Andre in 54 seconds and won the championship in 2 minutes and 47 seconds by allowing Werdum to come at him, planting his feet.
Yeah, that was a step away right hand.
Yeah.
And he it was interesting. I rewatched the fight over this weekend. I don't have Fight Pass, so I went and watched that fight instead for the most part. So I rewatched the fight, and it's interesting to kind of watch that fight because when you were watching it live and even just afterwards, it was a lot of talk about, wow, he caught him. He caught him coming in. And the word caught sometimes makes you think that he didn't earn that punch.
That it was lucky. Yeah.
Right. And it wasn't.
No.
He had his foot planted. It was a very, it's not the ideal stance, but it's definitely a training method. Just like a spinning back kick is not ideal, but sometimes you use that, you train that because that's the way you surprise your opponent. That's where you find them off guard with the holes in their defense. A way that he found a hole in the defense of Fabricio Werdum was to be stepping back and letting Werdum kind of come at him, not sure if he wants to do the takedown. Werdum in that instance was very, seemed very confident that he was like, okay, I'm going to pop him a couple times or I'm going to take him down. Not sure what I wanted to, boom, then he's on the ground. He's on the ground. He had no idea that punch was coming when Stipe was walking backwards. And Stipe had trained that punch. He said he had trained it in his camp going into that fight. He used it effectively, and he won the world title with it.
And you've got to think from a physics perspective, guys. If you go back and watch the fight, and you'll probably see it a couple times. If you don't see it on the road to the octagon, you'll see it in the conversations that happen. Today is Wednesday. Between Wednesday and Saturday is all of the energy of Stipe is moving backwards. Then he plants his foot, and all of the energy goes the other direction into Werdum's skull.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to train that is what makes this upcoming fight so interesting because both men can do it from multiple angles.
Mm-hmm.
And the X factor becomes this wrestling. The X factor becomes rounds 4 and 5 if we get there.
And you didn't Stipe the wrestling, no question. Even as long as Alistair's been fighting,
no
all
question.
The experience.
Zero question. And I could be totally wrong about this and you can laugh at me on Monday. But I think if Stipe wants to take it to the ground, he certainly can. That has just been, traditionally has been the kryptonite of Alistair Overeem. And I know that a lot of people thought that that was going to be Brock's keys to victory against Alistair. He just couldn't get it there.
Oh, his tummy wouldn't let him. His tummy wouldn't let him. I'm not saying that wasn't the factor. That may sound like
absolutely a factor. His tummy would not let him.
If you get kicked by now that's the thing. If Alistair Overeem kicks anybody in the stomach like that, they're probably going down, especially when half your stomach's been taken care of.
Right.
By your tummy rumbles. So if that happens in this fight, you still see Stipe go down even without the diverticulitis. So Alistair's got it there. It's ready for him to win. It's been the reason that he's been fighting in UFC as long as he has. Remember, it took him a long time to get here. As long as he's been in the UFC, it took him a long time to kind of get here. That Brock fight, I think, was his one of his first fights, right?
Brock,
that was his first fight. 2011.
Yeah.
It took him a long time. I mean, he was a long-time Strikeforce dream guy. He was a Pride guy for a long time. So it took him a long time to get to the UFC. And the reason he came to the UFC was to win the title. And it's taken a lot longer for him to essentially get into this spot than people thought it would take. Because after the Brock fight, most people picked him over Antonio Silva. Don't forget that. Antonio Silva had a nice run and was very dominant for a little while there. A lot of that started with the fight against Alistair Overeem. So don't forget, in this instance, that's what happened. And he's finally, after 5 years of fighting in the UFC, gotten to that title shot that most thought he would get within the first couple of months.
So who are you picking in this one?
This one's a tough one. It really is a tough one. I'm going to take Stipe. It's in his hometown. I think he's going to be on point with his training. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic for those first couple of rounds, especially. If we see it go longer, we're going to have to see where that gas tank is for Alistair Overeem. I think Stipe is going to retain the title, but one of the toughest things it's been to do in 2016 is to keep your title. Not just win it, but keep that title.
Right.
And I'll pick Stipe, but I don't think he's a big favorite in this regard.
And then the co-main event is Fabricio Werdum and Travis Brown. This seems to be, well, after this weekend, and we'll talk about this weekend here in a bit, but after this weekend, I think it gets a little bit muddier, but this seems to be a title eliminator. The winner of this one should get the winner of Stipe and Overeem.
Man, is Travis Brown there? I mean, he's the guy that we keep wanting to put there.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, in the Ken world of MMA math, Werdum is doing what you want him to do. He didn't get an instant rematch. He's got to fight another guy to get.
If he wins, sure.
Okay.
But I'm saying if Travis Brown wins...
I don't know.
Who does Kane have up next? Because he handed Travis Brown his last... That was the last fight. He handed Travis Brown the loss.
Well, and Kane's been talking this week that he wants winner, so...
That's where it gets muddier, as you like to say in these regards. It gets a lot muddier if Travis Brown wins this fight. If Fabricio wins this fight, he beat a top contender. He's back in the cage. He said already he wants the winner of this fight. And I think you can make a case either way. I think you make a more interesting case if you have actually Alistair Overeem win the title, because then you'll have a new matchup, so to speak, in this UFC heavyweight division. So it'll be interesting to see who wins this weekend. He took that loss against Alistair years ago. Don't forget about that with Fabricio Werdum. So you've got a lot built in if you've got this fight set up. He's got a loss against both the guys in the title fight that night.
So are you saying, because obviously Kane beat Brown at UFC 200 and Brown is filling in for Ben Rothwell this weekend,
right,
which is why he's fighting so soon. If Brown wins, Kane gets it? Is that what we're saying?
I'm not sure. What is Kane lined up for?
Nothing, because he just fought at 200. It was only
is
July.
Is he hurt again?
No. He just fought in July.
I feel like he gets hurt a lot. Okay. I'm just, well, maybe.
Not everyone's Conor McGregor that wants to fight 58 times
maybe
a year.
I'm just asking if he had something lined up.
No,
Jesus, Eric.
There's nothing lined up.
That's your part of the show, is to tell me when there's
fights. I am telling you, he's got nothing lined up right now.
Act like I'm asking a crazy question here. So.
He did just fight 7 weeks ago.
So, it feels like a long time ago. There's been a lot of fights since then. He needs to get his ass back in there.
32 fights in
Quit
7 weeks.
Being lazy. So, Cain Velasquez, I think, would. I know you hate that, though, because anytime Cain or JDS is mentioned in the title fights, they've basically held the belts and then let go of the belts a couple times.
The only thing I hate is I do not want to see those two ever fight again, because Kane is just going to put JDS in an old folks home. Like, I don't need to see that again. In the same way, and we don't want to derail the whole show, in the same way, I don't want to see BJ Penn destroyed by Ricardo Lamas. I don't want to see George St. Pierre destroyed by Robbie Lawler. Like, I don't need to see those things. So it's not that I'm against Kane at all. I agree with you. If Hoppe wins this weekend, if Travis Brown wins, he's got one more he's got to do, because he just lost to Kane. So if he wins, I think Kane gets winner. If Werdum wins, I think you've got to...
Well, gets winner gets muddy, too. Don't forget, gets winner gets muddy when we see what the fight looks like. We've had some pretty conclusive title fights these past couple of pay-per-views for the most part, right?
Yes.
Let's remember, we've had some back-and-forth wars, too. We'll go to the main event with Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. I know that wasn't a title fight, but that's another fight. If that fight... I know we're not going to see a heavyweight fight that looks like that, but if that's the kind of fight we saw from Stipe and Alistair, whoever loses, especially if the champ loses, you got to start talking about their rematch, too. I mean, that's a given. We've kind of gotten away from it a little bit, and it's a good thing in the UFC that it's not necessarily an automatic rematch, but you have to think about the fact that this could be a back-and-forth war between these two dudes, and at that point, does Fabricio jump back ahead of Alistair if Alistair loses in a war, or Stipe, who just lost the title. If he loses in a war, he just beat that guy. Does that guy get the title shot before he gets the rematch? It's one of those things you have to wait and see what happens this weekend before we figure it out.
Man, it's interesting that we're at this point where you're beginning to see, at least from a fan perspective, right? You're beginning to see in my mind why this company was worth $4 billion, right? Because right now you've got a bunch of divisions where it's the wild, wild west. You have these amazing fights at heavyweight that could go 17 different ways this weekend based on what happens, when if you rewind the clock 6-7 months ago, that was not the case. And now, even after this past weekend, and we'll get into that in a second, you've got Josh Barnett, who a huge, huge win over Andrei Arlovsky.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's in title contention yet, but if you were to tell me right now, okay, so let's play this out. Stipe wins, Werdum loses. So if you're going to tell me it's Stipe and Kane, I'm fine with that. If you're going to tell me that it's Werdum and Josh Barnett, fine with that too. If you're going to tell me it's Alistair Overeem and Travis Brown, fine with that too. I mean, these are all of these matches are super interesting at a division that 6-7-8 months ago was not all that interesting.
Yeah, it looked like Werdum was going to just hold that belt and run through the top 10 guys, and we were going to be in a situation like Demetrius Johnson. That's not the case.
We are not the Demetrius Johnson land.
Right, but I mean,
and I'm going to say this right now, guys, stop sending me the messages telling me that you think Tough is super interesting and this would be a really big test for it's not a test for Demetrius Johnson. Just shut up. I don't care that there's 16 guys with a title. Don't care. This is not a thing. Mm-hmm. Stop messaging me.
Steel sharpens steel, and those are all champions, Eric.
Mm-hmm. Sure it does. Stop messaging me. Just saying. This is not an apt comparison.
It's probably one guy. It's really mad. It's probably the 16 dudes on the show.
It's all the champions.
It's all. Do they all have really shoddily made belts in their profile pictures?
In the 14 minutes that I got to be online, I thought I would send you a message.
So who
steel
do you
sharpens
pick?
Steel.
Fabricio
Werdum sharpens iron.
I didn't send
crucible
you any messages.
The crucible of fire becomes a better man.
I'm not doing anything to stop doing that voice. Not doing anything else on the show. I'm writing
Sorry.
Notes for later.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I'm done. I'm all done. Right. I ran through all of my.
You done, Bobby's World?
Yes.
All right. So, Fabricio Werdum and Travis Brown. Who do you pick in the fight?
Werdum.
I think so too.
Werdum.
Because we were going to pick him in every fight out of the top 10
right,
a couple
right,
months back.
Yeah.
So there's no reason not to pick him here.
And I actually think this fight would have been more interesting if it was Rothwell. If Rothwell was in it,
yeah,
it would be harder for me to pick. I think.
Interesting because I think if we play a little MMA math, I think if you look at these fighters that are in the fight, I think if I look at Travis Brown, I would probably take him over Ben Rothwell,
which
just
is
kind of looking how they line
really
up. Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But I don't think he's got a chance really against Fabricio Werdum. Hell of a fighter. He was another dude that until he took that loss to Werdum, we thought that he was supposed to beat Werdum. Remember, that was a heavyweight title eliminator a couple
yep.
years back. He was supposed to beat Werdum, and then boom, you were going to finally get that title shot, Travis Brown. And you know, he lost to Werdum, and then he's been up and down since. Obviously, took a bad loss, which looks even worse now, to Andrei Arlovsky. Took a loss to Cain Velasquez, and you know, you can't be ashamed losing to that guy. So he's a hell of a fighter. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins. I just don't see it happening this weekend.
And then, of course, the one that everyone wants to talk about, which, like Ken said, there's some, despite the fact that I think the explanation of why he got the license was laughable because it doesn't make any sense. I certainly agree with you, Ken, that putting CM Punk on this card does wonders for Stipe Miocic.
Okay, so here's what I want to ask you.
Wonders.
Because this got really strange, and it's so many. This shows the weird obsession and interest level here with CM Punk on this card, because I don't think I've ever seen MMA reporters go out and try to talk to licensing boards. And I certainly have you?
No.
I mean, even with Brock, like they're like, oh, they jumpstarted his life. Okay, whatever. And he did 8 buckets of steroids, maybe. Who knows? Nobody cared that much. Now we're like, we're talking to the Ohio commissioner and asking, what are you talking about? Do you disagree with him being licensed?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
No. Not
okay.
At all. I just think like
I'm going to say the dude spent 2 years
with
Duke Rufus. The dude spent years on the road in combat sports. And again, I get that that's not MMA and that's not fighting and what he's doing, but it's certainly a recognition of danger and being able to meet standards for licensing, because a lot of people forget WWE has to license in almost all of their states, and they're licensed very similarly to boxing and MMA in many states and regions. So he's familiar with the process. He's trained for 2 years. He's fighting a guy with one fight in the UFC. He's not fighting a guy with 10 fights in the UFC. That's where if you want to be upset about the language and the licensing, you could be upset. But that's not the case. They also mentioned something I thought was interesting, considering Joe Silva's decided to step away at the end of the year, that Joe Silva matching these guys up carries a lot of weight with not just this commissioner, but with a lot of the commissioners. Basically, Joe Silva hands in his fight sheet and goes, goes, here's how I match these guys up. Here's how I paired them up. And these commissions have given him credence and given him the benefit of the doubt, saying, I trust that you've matched these guys up well. So we're going to license your guys because I trust that this guy who's fighting this other guy, they're similar enough. Nobody's going to walk out of here in a stretcher unless something insanely wrong happens inside the fight. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little side note when we started talking about licensing stories this week with CM Punk.
Yeah, well, and I thought it was funny that all I thought was funny was just the explanation. Like, well, because Brock Lesnar.
It was a little weird. Like, Brock Lesnar was a wrestler. He's a wrestler. Let's give him a license.
Right.
I feel like
that part was weird.
If that's all that went into it, okay, it's a little strange, but I don't feel like that's all that went into it. This guy's, you got to remember too, this guy's probably getting asked a question for the first time in his life.
Right.
He feels like he's the first time you get asked a question as any type of pseudo governmental figure. I mean, there's people all over the government that never deal with the public, never deal with interviews. So as soon as you get asked a question, I'm sure he's defensive. Like, what? What do you mean, why'd I license? I didn't have to think about it. Oh, Brock's a wrestler. He's a wrestler. Really, dude? Really, dude? That's your answer? That's what you came up with?
Right.
So did you see Joe Rogan had Donald Cerrone on the show on his Joe Rogan Experience? Is that what he's calling it now?
Yes, the JRE.
The JRE. So he had some interesting things to say about CM Punk on that show.
You can't say anything about him. Like, they want me to hype it up. I'm like, it's very interesting. He did the right thing. He went to a real good camp. Mm-hmm. He didn't fight for 2 whole years. He's just been training.
Which you would have to.
Yeah. Apparently
you
he's done some
smokers. Because you can't. There's no way you could learn a decade of skills in 3 months.
No, and that kid he's fighting is good. The kid he's fighting can scrap. I like the way he took that dude's back. I like the way he choked him out, showed real good technique. He knows how to fight. Like, it's not going to be an easy fight.
No, I mean, and for CM Punk, it's to fight someone in the UFC.
Let's call him Phil.
Phil.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
To fight his
Phil.
Name, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be Phil Brooks when he fights, I think. I'm pretty sure.
No, they're coming out of the Punk.
Are they really saying CM Punk?
Why not?
Because I don't know. Well, they must have made a deal with the WWE so they could use Brock Lesnar.
That's UFC probably owns everything. Talk about Illuminati.
The Illuminati.
They own your likeness for life.
Is that necessary?
I don't think so. I think when I'm 80, I should be able to get that back.
So, as so many things happen to do when you start talking about CM Punk, you get distracted and other things come up. So, they start talking about whether or not he's going to use his name, which I think is really interesting because I thought Joe Rogan was breaking things down about as well as we've seen them broken down. He's saying basically, hey, I need to hype this fight. We need to sell this fight. I don't know much about the dude, but what I do know is that he's done what you would ask anybody in this situation to do.
Yeah, and I think if this is 12 months ago and he didn't get injured, we're probably having a different discussion.
Really? Are we?
Well, and by that I mean all of the, you know, you're seeing the stories. You know, I've got a computer over here and you type his name in, right? And
the funniest thing is if you go to the wiki page for UFC 203, it's CM Punk with his WWE belt.
Right.
Which goes back to what? UFC 200. All those amazing fights on the card, you throw it into Google, the first pictures of Brock and The Undertaker.
Right.
So these guys have some drawing power.
They do. What all I'm saying is a year ago, I think I'm giving a little bit more credence to the stories that are like, he's going to get his ass kicked. He's out of his element. He hasn't done this. He hasn't done that. Spending 2 years locked in a cage with Duke Rufus, I don't know that I'm ready to go, he has no chance in this fight. Because it's not as if, and Mickey Gall said this on the call if you didn't listen, it's not as if the bright lights are going to scare him or the people are going to scare him.
Yeah.
Right? None of that stuff's going to scare him. And chances are the physical contact's not going to scare him. He still may have the adrenaline dump of the first time being in the UFC. That might still happen. Do I think he can beat Mickey Gall? I don't know because, like Rogan just said, Gall looked great in his first fight. However, let's remember that Gall fought a guy, choked the guy out unconscious. That guy went back to his regular job, which is an MMA journalist sitting in the front row of the same event that he got choked unconscious at. So it's not
he literally walked back down.
Walked backstage, took a shower, and then came back and sat next to Ariel Helwani.
See, so I would have loved it better if he just would have went down in his fight shorts.
Right.
Like, so, I gotta watch these fights. I gotta see what's going on.
It's not as if he beat Evan Dunham and is now going to fight CM Punk. That's not exactly what happened. However, he looked good. And I think that, you know, his skill set is there. He's only 2 fights in his pro career. One in the UFC, one on Looking for a Fight. So
well, that was dead serious. serious MMA.
Dead serious MMA. Sorry, which is far more serious than the UFC because it's dead serious.
Dead serious. Dead serious 17. They've made it through a lot of these events.
I did some voice work for them earlier. So do I think CM Punk can win this one? I don't know. But do I think he can make it interesting? Yeah, because the one thing I will tell you, and you and I have been fans of WWF and WWE for as long as we can remember, it's not as if these guys don't punish their bodies. So being hurt is not a thing that's going to end this fight. It's not as if they took a dude from the cash register at Best Buy and went, hey, go hang out with Anthony Pettis for 12 months and then we'll see you at UFC 203. That's not exactly what happened.
Well, and other than suffering the injury during training camp, he said over and over and over and over again, this is the best he's felt in his life. And here's the interesting dynamic when you kind of look at the situation too, is he says ultimately that if this were around when he was growing up in the way it is now, he probably would have gone to MMA and tried to make a go of this rather than pro wrestling.
And lots of those guys say that.
And a lot of those guys do. It's just, it's where you make the money at the time. Think about even when Brock first came out of college, he was an NCAA decorated wrestler. And his best option at the time was WWE. He made millions and millions of dollars. He lifted his profile beyond that of any UFC fighter at the time, and then was able to actually cash that into a longer career in MMA and wrestling. So I don't know if the hate is well directed against CM Punk in this regard. The guy's basically saying, hey, the fact that I'm doing this, I've won. I don't know if you take that attitude into the cage, because if you take that attitude in, you're probably not going to win. Just walking in the cage saying you won, I understand it, and it's probably 100% true, Eric, but that doesn't necessarily need to be the thing you take into the cage because, you know, Mickey Gall's 24 years old. He's a young guy. CM Punk's almost 40 at this point, and CM Punk's not a guy who's been doing this like Randy Couture or Josh Barnett or Mark Hunt. You know, he's a guy that just started doing this. Now, you know, his plus is that he's feeling better than he ever has in his life, and that does wonders for you.
And if you haven't watched The Embedded, he looks, if you've been watching
The Evolution
of Punk versus Embedded, like, he looks a million times better.
Well, and most of The Evolution of Punk was supposed to be a 1-year documentary.
Sure.
But he got injured, so we haven't seen any recent footage there.
But if you compare the two, he looks a lot different.
Yeah.
And a lot thinner and in better shape and healthier and all of that stuff.
Here's the other thing you can say about Duke Rufus, is he is not going to put a guy in the cage that is going to hurt his reputation or make his gym look
bad. No,
he's,
what did he say this week? If Anthony had
he
lost,
was gonna quit,
he was going to quit his
UFC
job.
He was like, if I can't make Anthony, I'm quitting because I can't do this. So there's a guy that's willing to walk away from Anthony Pettis. He's willing to walk away from CM Punk people. So
which will tell you two things. One, how much weight he puts into his own skill set, and two, that we were not far off about how important that fight was for Anthony Pettis, that like everything was going to be terrible if he had lost that fight.
They were just going to shut the gym down, apparently. CM Punk wouldn't be here today because Duke would have just
he would have been still in the parking lot waiting for it to open.
Been jingling the lock with his dog Larry outside peeing on everything. Like, really, AJ, you can't take the dog for a day? Like, he locked up the gym. So I think the takeaway from what Joe Rogan said, and really from looking at everything that you've looked at and seen so far, is the dude has done everything you can ask of him. This isn't a I'm sure he's getting paid. There was a funny part on the media call. Now, am I the only one that thought he was joking when he said he weighed 200 pounds? Because that's also been a through line this week, whether or not he's going to get to 170.
Of course he was joking. Because, like, even when
within 20 minutes of that conference call, the headline was CM Punk still has 30 pounds to lose before next week's fight. I don't think he's at 200 pounds.
Well, no.
He certainly better not be today. So I did think that was funny, though, because on the call, if you listen to it, Mickey Gall invited him to come in heavy because he'd love to take 20% of CM Punk's purse.
Right.
And CM Punk said that'd be more money than you've ever made in your blanking life.
Yes.
So CM Punk's getting paid, but he's not doing this to cash in. He can do a lot of other things to cash in if he wanted to at this point. He's doing it because he never got the chance to, and he doesn't want to look in the rearview mirror of life, as he's put it, and say, man, I should have gone for it. I should have given it a try. So the guy's done everything you can expect him to do. He uprooted his life. He moved to Milwaukee. You know, I mean, he left Chicago, so it's not not that big a trade-off.
Hey.
What? Come on.
Ugh.
He left Rahm Emanuel Chicago. Not that big a trade-off.
Okay. All
anyways,
right.
But
this show just got interesting.
He uplifted his entire family, which is his dog and his wife. But he took, you know, he did everything you would expect somebody to do. So I guess the hate on the guy is he's a WWE guy. He's a wrestler. He's taking somebody's spot. He's not taking anybody's spot, people. There was nobody else that was going to be on this card that was going to make the money he's making. So just calm down. It'll be interesting to see. Are you pulling your CM Punk gear out of the closet for this weekend?
I think the fight is going to be super interesting. Like I said, I mean,
it's the most interesting fight on the card, I think. It doesn't have the most implications, but it's the most interesting fight.
Here's the more interesting, that what makes it so interesting. Uriah Faber's on this card.
Yeah, I forgot
Nobody
about
is
that.
Talking about that.
Forgot
Zero
about
people
Uriah
talking
Faber.
About Uriah Faber taking on Jimmy Rivera. That's also on the main card. And Calderwood and Andrade are.
So he fights what? He's going to fight two or three guys, probably beat them all before he gets back to another championship fight, right?
Right, for sure.
That's your
yes.
right. I love at first it was annoying, but I just want to see if he can do this until he's like 50. Because, I mean, he's almost 40 now, right? Uriah
right.
Faber?
Yes.
How awesome would that be if, like, every three fights, Uriah Faber just fights for the belt?
Right.
Doesn't win it. Can't get it. He'll be back. Three more fights. I'll see you later.
You've also got Jessica Ai and Beth Cohea. They are on the prelims. Brad Tavares on the prelims. Lentz on the prelims. Ian McCall is back. He's on the prelims. On Fight Pass, the one that you should pay attention to is Yancy Medeiros and Sean Spencer. That will be fire. So this is a great card with a lot of eyeballs on it because of CM Punk, which I think is good because it spotlights a lot of these great fighters that are going to be on this card. I'm excited to see what happens. I have no idea what's going to happen between Gall and Punk. I don't know that Punk has what it takes to win. However, again,
there's a lot of people talking about the card. Now, by the way, this isn't translating into Brock or Connor numbers,
no,
people.
No.
This is a lot
this
of talk about a card that wouldn't have been talked about as much.
This is translating to do what Ken does best. This is translating into a month that traditionally they suffer from because lots of people don't buy pay-per-views in September. For whatever reason, this will make their September look better than it normally does.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's doing. But no, it is not Brock Lesnar numbers. It is not Conor McGregor numbers. Okay, quickly before we bounce for the weekend, I do want to talk about UFC Fight Night Hamburg because I want to say first, Ken was right. If you listened to last week's show, he was talking about what could be next for Daniel Cormier. And he was so bold to say, what about Ryan Bader? We should get Ryan Bader in there. And I was like, no, Gustafson's the guy. He's got to fight this weekend. Let's see what happens. Except Gustafson went all George St. Pierre on Yan and nearly lost in the first round and put on a really, really boring survival match. Meanwhile, Ryan Bader decided to send Iri Latifi back to his ancestors by knocking his head clear off of his shoulders and I think puts a stamp on the fact that if you wanted to do tomorrow, if Rumble has to fight Jones and you need something for Cormier to do, I am totally fine with Bader being in that slot.
My favorite part of those type of fights when those guys are in that position and they finish a fight that way, you know it's an insane fight. And I told you my fight pass lapsed and I didn't steal Eric's password, UFC intern.
Lapsed. And by lapsed, I mean I hit delete on the
right.
credit card.
Yes. Maybe later. You're going to get Silva to do another fight again? Let's see that. So I wasn't watching the fights live. And very often, if they're doing a fight pass card, especially if they're doing a pay-per-view, UFC will not show you how fights ended. That's kind of part of the draw there. Like, hey, you come see how this ended. You might get a still shot. You might see something else. The UFC Facebook and Twitter accounts had a GIF up of Ryan Bader's knockout within like 5 minutes of it happening to show you what had just happened and what amazing things you were missing on that card. That was one of the coolest and scariest looking knockouts we've seen in a
yes,
while.
But I think stamps what you said last week. You want to do those two? I am totally fine with it. The other fight that was a lot of fun, and I know Ken and I were excited to talk about it, was Andre and Josh Barnett. This fight was back and forth, and I know it wasn't the most beautiful fight in those first two rounds. In the third round, I believe, is when Andre inadvertently thumbs Josh Barnett in the eye.
Yeah.
And as this fight begins to unravel, I'm watching this going, oh no, because taking unprotected shots from Andre.
I was going to say, not only did, for those that didn't see it, he got caught in the eye and it wasn't stopped.
It wasn't stopped.
So
and it wasn't Andre's fault. I'm not saying Andre did it, but it happened.
No, Josh said afterwards he knew it was inadvertent. Josh did not realize the ref didn't see it though. So just to kind of paint a little more of a picture.
So Josh turns and his face is facing the
He
cage.
he's assuming the fight has just been, like, the fighter's been called off because, hey, I just got poked in the eye pretty bad. Ref had to see that.
Meanwhile, Andre is trying to end his life because that's what Andre does.
Because he should, because the ref hasn't ended
right.
the fight.
So Josh somehow survives that, even though the first two rounds, they both knocked each other down in the first round, and you thought this thing was going to be over in 35 seconds. And how the end plays out, I was just, this is why I've always loved Josh and his ability to do catch wrestling. So what happens is they get up against the cage. Josh locks up essentially a key lock and tosses Andre onto the floor via his shoulder and subs him that way. I thought
he slid it into a choke.
And then slid it into a choke and then ends the fight. I just thought the slickness of Josh Barnett and that catch wrestling brings him into a conversation where you just can never count this guy out. And if you forever and ever, if you want to keep Josh Barnett at number four or number five in the heavyweight division, I'm fine with that because of performances like this. I just thought that transition from the key lock to taking it to the ground to the RNC to ending the fight was a very, very fun way to end this card, and why the UFC was so quick to put up all of this stuff, because you had the Bader knockout and you had this fight, which I just thought were a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So this is interesting too. So we'll see where those guys land. Barnett's that dude where he's never in the title picture, but right when you're thinking, okay, if he loses a couple in a row, they're going to finally cut bait here. He just goes out and he wins the fight. So that's going to be really interesting to see what they do in this heavyweight division. We'll find out obviously more after this weekend's event at UFC 203. Oh, by the way, do you have anything else on 203? Because I wanted to bring up one more thing.
No.
Michael Bisping, did you see where he called out Dan Henderson for cheating in their first fight?
Yes.
So I like that. So we got 204 already building too. We've had some nice builds here coming up in the past couple of months with these cards.
Yeah, well, and I think this year is getting really interesting. We have the rumors. I don't want to get into them right now because nothing's confirmed, but you have the rumors that it's going to be Conor McGregor at Madison Square Garden, and the rumor is it's either going to be Eddie Alvarez for 155 or Jose Aldo at 145. Currently, if you follow the Diz on Twitter, he's one of our insiders that we like to talk to occasionally, and we'll get him on when this gets confirmed. He's saying from his inside sources, and we'll end it here, is that the negotiating hang-up, if you will, is that McGregor wants Alvarez at Madison Square Garden at 155, the caveat being he'll defend featherweight whenever he damn well feels like it. That's the caveat. He doesn't want to relinquish his title. He wants to hold both of them.
And we've all seen Dana walk back that comment about stripping him, so we have to wonder.
So we'll see how this breaks down, but it looks at this point that one way, shape, or form, you're getting Conor at Madison Square Garden. Now, a cautionary tale is if they decide to go with Jose Aldo, let's remember that Jose's ability to get to an event is not a lock. It is not the Stone Cold lock of the week, because he pulls out and gets hurt a lot. Mm-hmm. So I would guess that, as Ken just alluded to, that they will once again walk back on their comment about stripping him and be like, Alvarez will be there. That's a for sure thing. Let's do that. You can keep your title, defend it in 17. That's fine. Hmm. Do your thing.
And we might be looking at Bisping GSP coming up too.
I'm down with that too.
You down with that? If they ever get back to GSP, apparently they stop calling him.
Yeah, well, it's the Reebok deal. Is that what we're still dealing with?
I'm not sure if it's a Reebok. Why are these guys all hung up on the Reebok deal?
I don't know. Isn't he making enough money doing the kickboxer
thing? That's what I'm wondering. I mean, can't he just go be another Marvel guy or something when
he's already
in
the kickboxer remake? Like, I feel like he's all right.
So it's interesting. We'll talk more about that. We obviously covered that a lot last week. We'll talk more about it after this weekend's fights and figure out where GSP lands.
Follow us on Twitter at Wow Show. It is Way of the Warrior, and Facebook at Wow Show. Both places. Sorry about that. It is Way of the Warrior.
Yeah, they stole the little at thing on Facebook.
Yes.
Did your marketer friends tell you about that? Or?
They did. Sorry.
Don't you pay attention to marketer meetings?
I do. I was sleeping through that one, though. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. Have a great weekend. I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality. The cult of personality.